perfume down to your structure. Think I wait. This is Robin, the program manager at CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco, the best astronomy program on the planet. Put it in your purse and call. On the telephone, she heard my voice. Tell me to pick her up in my Rolls Royce. My Rolls Royce is not for ladies. Then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Mercedes. My Mercedes would be full of the disease. Then girl, I'm gonna take you in my fire. My player days is over. Well, maybe not completely, but still in all. Come here, let's see a hug on my bed. And let me get between your legs. Good afternoon. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk. And it is nice today. It's not great. So we're looking at astronomy today. That's what I always look at. And we're looking a bit far away. Not really so far in astronomical terms. But when we talk about human beings, we look at something to do with astronomy, and it could have a lifetime of millions or billions of years, and we only look at it through a narrow time frame of a few years. But sometimes we're looking at things that are, at the instant, they're 3,000 light years from Earth. Now that's pretty far, but not so far in astronomical terms, because we have galaxies that are 10 billion or more light years away. So 3,000 light years is far, but we can still see it, and we're going to talk about it. We're going to say it's a lost planet, because that's what it is. So today I'm spicing things up a bit. I'm not doing NASA.org, I'm doing technology.org. Technology.org, if nobody's been to it, it's a great site. It has lots of articles about a lot of different things, and one of the things it has is space and astronomy. I really like, though, on that website, their material science. They talk a lot about material science, and it's an interesting topic in itself. So, but today I'm going to talk about a lost planet about the size of Neptune. So Neptune is one of our gas planets in our solar system. It's not as big as, let's say, Saturn or Jupiter, who's their scale about 100 times bigger than Earth. I believe Neptune's something like 14 times bigger than Earth. So when we talk about bigger, does that mean more massive or size-wise? I got to look that up. Okay, so Yale, now we're looking at technology.org. It's saying finding a lost planet about the size of Neptune. It's posted today, so I'm going to read on about it. Yale astronomers have discovered a lost planet that is nearly the size of Neptune and tucked away in a solar system 3,000 light years from Earth. So it is tucked away somehow. The new planet, Kepler-150, was overlooked for several years. Just like our Michelle Kunimoto, she found something, four planets that were overlooked by NASA astronomers. So way to go, Michelle. I still promise to get Michelle in, and I hope I can one day. I know she's probably very, very busy, because I think she's in a master's degree program now, so she has a lot of homework to do. So anyway, now we're going to talk about a lost planet that is 3,000 light years away, and it was discovered by Yale astronomers. The new planet, Kepler-150, was overlooked for several years. Computer algorithms identify most such exoplanets, which are planets located outside our solar system. The algorithm searched through data from space mission surveys, looking for the telltale transits of planets orbiting in front of distant stars. But sometimes the computers miss something. In this case, it was a planet in the Kepler-150 system with a long orbit around its sun. Kepler-150 takes 637 days to circle its sun, one of the longest orbits for any known system with five or more planets. Now, isn't that exciting? We're studying a system here with five or more planets. The Kepler mission found four other planets in the Kepler-150 system, Kepler-150 B, C, D, and E, several years ago. All of them have orbits much closer to the sun than the new planet does. So says Joseph Schmidt, a graduate student at Yale and lead author of a new paper in the Astronomical Journal, describing the planet, and quote, only by using our new technique of modeling and subtracting out the transit signals of known planets could we then actually see it for what it really was. Essentially, it was hiding in plain sight in a forest of other planetary transits. Co-authors of the study are Yale astronomy professor Deborah Fisher and John Jenkins of NASA's Ames Research Center. I think it's quite amazing how NASA coordinates with so many universities in America. And not just that, when we talk about NASA, I just mentioned the NASA Ames Research Center. There's the Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland. Of course, there's Cape Canaveral and the Houston where they launch, Cape Canaveral in Florida and Houston where they launch rockets. Then there's the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, and a host of other centers. Plus, they have so many telescopes and observatories in space. They have lots of rovers on Mars. And how they coordinate and how they do their science is quite amazing. They spent a lot of time and effort on it, so that's very, very good for us all who love astronomy. In Canada, we don't have those privileges, so I don't know what can we do about it. Okay, now I'm going to read an article. It says, how a young-looking lunar volcano hides its true age. New research looks at how the strange volcanic caldera of the moon was formed. So there's a picture of a caldera, and we're going to talk about it. Again, it's on www.technology.org, and the title of the article, which was posted today, says, how a young-looking lunar volcano hides its true age. While orbiting the moon in 1971, the crew of Apollo 15 photographed a strange geological feature, a bumpy D-shaped depression about 2 miles long and 1 mile wide that has fascinated planetary scientists ever since. Some have suggested the feature, known as Ina, is evidence of a volcanic eruption moon within the past 100 million years, a billion years or so after most volcanic activity on the moon is thought to have ceased. That last sentence, it was weird. It's evidence of volcano eruption on the moon. Okay, it forgot that. But new research led by Brown University geologists, see that? Brown University. So many universities coordinate with NASA. They use their telescope. They rent time or they submit their proposals. So they're doing really good research in America. But new research led by Brown University geologists suggests that Ina is not so young after all. The analysis, published in the journal Geology, concludes that the feature was actually formed by an eruption around 3.5 billion years ago, around the same age as the dark volcanic deposits we see on the moon's near side. It's the peculiar type of lava that erupted from Ina that helps it hide its age, the researchers say. So said Jim Head, co-author of the paper and professor in Brown University's Department of Earth, Environmental, and Planetary Sciences. As interesting as it would be for Ina to have formed in the recent geological past, we just don't think that's the case. The model we've developed for Ina's formation puts it firmly within the period of peak volcanic activity on the moon several billion years ago. Then the next paragraph of the title says, youthful appearance. Ina sits near the summit of a gently sloped mound of basaltic rock, leading many scientists to conclude that it was likely the caldera of an ancient lunar volcano. But just how ancient wasn't clear. While the flanks of the volcano look billions of years old, the Ina caldera itself looks much younger. One sign of youth is its bright appearance relative to its surroundings. The brightness suggests Ina hasn't had much time to accumulate as much regolith, the layer of loose rock and dust that builds up on the surface over time. Then there are Ina's distinctive mounds, 80 or so smooth hills of rock, some standing as tall as 100 feet, which dominate the landscape within the caldera. The mounds appear to have far fewer impact craters on them compared to the surrounding area. Another sign of relative youth. Over time, it's expected that a surface should accumulate craters of various sizes at fairly constant rates. So scientists used the number and size of craters to estimate the relative age of a surface. In 2014, a team of researchers did a careful crater count on Ennis Mound and concluded, that's 2.5, 3 years ago, and concluded they must have formed by lava that erupted to the surface within the last 50 to 100 million years. So says Head again, and quote, that was a real puzzling finding. I think most people agree that the volcano Ennis sits on was formed billions of years ago, which means there would have been a pause in volcanic activity for a billion years or more before the activity that formed Ennis. We wanted to see if there might be something about geological structure with Ennis that throws off our estimate of its age. Then the next paragraph title, it says, not so young with a question mark. The researchers looked at well-studied volcanoes on Earth that might be similar to Ennis. Ennis appears to be a pit crater on a shield volcano, a gently sloping mountain similar to the Kilauea volcano in Hawaii. Kilauea has a pit crater similar to Ennis, known as the Kilauea Iki crater, which erupted in 1959. As lava from that eruption solidified, it created a highly porous rock layer inside the pit with underground vesicles as large as 3 feet in diameter and surface void space as deep as 2 feet. That porous surface, Head and his colleagues say, is created by the nature of the lava erupted in the late stages of events like this one. As the subsurface lava supply starts to diminish, it erupts as magmatic foam, a bubbly mixture of lava and gas. When that foam cools and solidifies, it forms a highly porous surface. The researchers suggest that an Ennis eruption would have also produced magmatic foam. And because of the moon's decreased gravity and nearly absent atmosphere, the lunar foam would have been even fluffier than that on Earth, so it's expected that the structures within Ennis are even more porous than on Earth. It's the high porosity, that's a nice word, porosity of those surfaces that throws off date estimates for Ennis, both by hiding the buildup of regolith and by throwing off crater counts. A highly porous surface, the researchers say, would lose rock and dust to filter into surface void space, A highly porous surface, the researchers say, would allow loose rock and dust to filter into surface void space, making it appear as though less regolith has built up. That process would be perpetuated by seismic shaking in the region, much of which is caused by ongoing meteor impact. So says Head, it's like banging on the side of a sleeve to make the flour go through. Regolith is jolted into holes rather than sitting on the surface, which makes Ennis look a lot younger. So it's the activity of the regolith that's been either sifted down or sifted up in the atmosphere that makes it look younger than it is. Porosity could also skew crater counts. Laboratory experiments using a high-speed projectile cannon have shown that impacts into porous targets make much smaller craters. Because of Ennis' extreme porosity, the researchers say its craters are much smaller than they would normally be, and many craters might not be visible at all. That could drastically alter the age estimate derived from crater counts. So thank you for listening. Sorry I was late today. There's something called a bus, which sometimes just doesn't come. So I'll try to get here early next time. And I received an email from the Legal Observatory. I'll talk to you about that last time. And there is something here. Someone brought up Michael Bublé. And guess what? He's my cousin, but through marriage. So not related. Only through marriage. Okay, so have a nice day. This is Marco. You have been listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.